Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast for you today.
Today we will be discussing The Gentleman's Art of Dressing with Economy by a lounger at the clubs.
I am so excited. Wait, did it actually say a lounger at the clubs?
A lounger at the clubs.
That's my favorite author. A lounger? Oh my god, he's written so much.
So as you might have guessed, it's a book. Published originally in 1876 as a budget fashion guide for Victorian middle-class men.
Budget fashion guide, huh?
Dressing with Economy. And reprinted in 2012 by the British Library. Without further ado, let us dive into the preface.
Profess me, professor.
The preface to a book, like the name of a baby or the sign of a public house, though often thought of, is seldom decided on until the supreme moment arrives when the vexed question must be definitely settled. And now that I am brought face to face with the difficulty, I find, like Canning's needy knife grinder, that I really have no story to tell further than what is embodied in the book itself.
Uh-huh.
That was one sentence.
Okay.
Strap in.
There's a lot going on there.
Those who remember the dress of 40 years ago, as I do, are able to appreciate the change. The saying that midshipmen dress with a needle and undress with a pocket knife might be applied to the costume of that day.
I don't really know what that means.
That means they are sewn into their clothes in the morning and cut out of them at night. Because they are so tight.
Oh, okay, they're tight. I thought it was because they were dead.
No. The tightly fitting trousers, strapped closely down and hauled up taut to the total preclusion of all sedentary occupation, were a walking pillory.
A walking pillory.
While the buckram-stiffened cravats were literally stocks.
Literally.
Literally. So, like, everyone bemoaning that literally has come to mean figuratively in recent years. Recent years include the 1870s, so...
You know, get over it, I guess.
Wellington boots were donned by pulleys and not doffed without machinery.
It's weirding me out.
Waistcoats were worn double, the under one usually of a lemon tint.
Lemon?
The coat, which was entered by a hand-to-hand fight, was purgatory to wear, and deliverance thence was little short of a miracle.
Wow.
Meanwhile, in the 1870s, the cheap tailor of the day, aided by the sewing machine, has been a great reformer and leveler of class, breaking down the social distinction which formerly separated men in dress.
Yeah?
So, thanks to the sewing machine, you can't tell by looking at a guy what class of society he belongs to. Because now everyone can afford to have things sewn up.
Now, is this being considered a good or a bad thing?
As a gentleman attempting to dress with economy, it's a good thing.
Okay.
Hashtag thanks, Martha. At present, it is impossible to distinguish a gentleman by his raiment only, and whatever gradations of rank may exist in this country, I consider it an advantage that, prima facie, all should appear equal and entitled to class themselves as gentlemen, so far as outward and visible signs may go.
Okay, that sounds nice.
Even to be mistaken for a gentleman might often give noble aspirations and induce a man to try and behave as such.
Oh, I see. Now we are getting classist.
The cynic who said Eve sinned that she might dress has not enlightened us as to Adam's motive for so doing.
Okay. Becoming increasingly confused at what this man is trying to get across. I think he just likes talking about fashion.
I think he might. Between the coxcomb and the sloven, however, there is a gulf as wide as between the good Templar and the dipsomaniac. And without being either, the practical man may be glad of a few hints both on dressing and economy.
Now that one's just weird, that sentence.
The good Templar being a member of the temperance movement, which strove to eliminate drinking. The most famous example of their work is probably I'm completely blanking. The reason for the plot of Boardwalk Empire, alcohol is banned. What was that called?
Wow, I just forgot. I caught it. I caught your forgot it. Not abolition.
Write in to antiquesfreaks@gmail.com if you know the answer.
Oh, I'm typing in 1920s no drinky. Prohibition!
Prohibition! Yes, Prohibition is the most famous example of the temperance movement's work, and also a very good example of why their strategy was flawed. A dipsomaniac is the Victorian term for an alcoholic.
Dipsomaniac, wow.
Dipsomaniac.
I mean, I guess I see why they ended up dumping that. It sounds a little too romantic.
Which brings us to Chapter 1, Introductory on Dress.
Finally.
Our subject is to be considered under two heads: how to dress as a gentleman, and how to do so with economy. As strongly implied by the title of this book.
Yes, I had rather assumed that that is what he wanted to teach me.
Simply wearing good clothes will not constitute dressing as a gentleman, for the cad, the snob, and the pretentious swell may all be super finely clad, but the garb of a gentleman is not known to them.
On God?
The cad comes first. He is, in Mr. Bright's favorite language, the residuum of third-class counter-jumpers. He blossoms freely on Sundays and other holidays and makes the streets hideous by his presence.
Okay.
His outward invisible signs are as under: shiny black frock coat and black pants, the former buttoned awry, the latter short with legs of uneven length. Hat related to the fretful porcupine.
Fretful porcupine. What is a counter jumper?
It is a very rude and classist term for what we would today call checkout person.
Oh, register biscuit.
I mean, I feel like register biscuit is almost as rude, but yes.
Well, I came up with that one to describe myself, so it's fine, I can say it.
Embroidered shirt, unregenerate. Green satin scarf, stabbed with mock pin of colored glass, set in brass.
What is he? All right, I guess every step of the way I need you to hold my hand through what this man is saying. So I'm becoming increasingly agitated by the way he's talking to me.
What particular point would you like me to illuminate?
That whole last line, what was it?
Green satin scarf, stabbed with mock pin of colored glass, set in brass.
Okay, yeah, what is that one?
He is objecting to not only the loud color and shiny fabric of the scarf, but the fact that it is pinned with a pin of mere brass and glass rather than precious metal and actual jewels.
Oh, so he is being classist.
Yes.
Gotcha.
This is a book written in Victorian England. He is being classist.
Well, I thought that given that, like, it was about, like, how to be poor but, like, fashionable, I thought that he would be nicer, but he's not very nice at all, is he?
No, sorry. Gloves of startling hue with an unexplored territory towards the fingertips.
Oh, okay. All right. That one I know. His gloves is too big.
Such is the cad. Caddy.
All right. I bet he feels real clever for that, but I don't get it.
He's saying a cad is like a cad. He's saying it's shaped like itself.
Well, you know what? That one's on him. That was dumb.
The snob, on the other hand, wears clothes elaborately cut and of novel design.
Novelty clothes, huh?
There is much drawing, as the artists say, about his dress.
Is there? It sounds fake, but okay.
He takes for model the stock music hall so-called comic vocalist, and affects thunder and lightning trousers, peg toppy, or in the other extreme of horsiness, slap bang coat, broadly lapelled, buttoning at the umbilical region.
Hey, that barely registered as English. All right, walk me back. No, actually, you know what? I'm gonna actually ask for clarification on slap bang.
We would call it slap dash, slapped together.
Oh, thank God. Okay, I thought it was gonna be weirder than that, but it still sucks, but I'll take it.
Stock music hall so-called comic vocalist probably refers to the music hall stock character of Champagne Charlie, which was a caricature of the rich men who were slumming it at these very music halls.
Okay, makes sense.
Thunder and lightning trousers would be pinstripe trousers with very light stripes against a very dark background.
Okay.
Buttoning at the umbilical region means his coat buttons around his belly button.
Is that bad?
Apparently so.
Huh, okay.
And broad lapels mean the lapels are broad.
Okay. It's altogether, it really sounded like they were trying to make me mad again. Like, why are you just gonna say words?
If on good terms with his laundress, he puts forth his linen shirt front and cuffs on evidence. Else covers up the one with a vast expanse of satin scarf, donning reversibles to do duty for the other.
Okay. This guy is judgy.
A little bit. Such is the snob. Copy him not.
I shan't.
The swells may be divided into two classes: the swell proper, who tries to dress well and succeeds, and the pretentious swell, who tries to dress well and don't.
Okay. Right.
His is a style carefully to be eschewed. It is not easy to describe its particularities, but would you see it, to take not for an example but as a fearful warning, visit the buffets of some fashionable city restaurants and observe the loudly dressed young men flirting with sensation barmaids who serve therein, and you may study the type to imperfection.
Okay, wow, all right. Thank you, sir. If you could dial it back a bit. we're starting to border into the hateful, sir.
The swell proper is faultless in his attire, so far as cut, fit, makeup, and material go, but unfortunately leaves the impression that he was made for his clothes and not his clothes made for him.
Ooh, burnt.
Nor does he wear his dress with ease. He appears afraid of wrinkling his coat when he moves and of kneeing his pants when he sits, and too frequently poses that the crowd may see he has taken toil and trouble to produce an effect.
This is a dipshit who wants to, like, look good. What an idiot.
I think there's a difference between wanting to look good and voguing down the street to make sure everyone sees your outfit.
There is literally no difference. And here's the thing. If your outfit good, I'm gonna see you vogue.
Dressing thus is dressing as an artist to illustrate costume, but decidedly not dressing as a gentleman. In fact, no one should aim at looking like a dressed block in a ready-made tailor's window, nor appear as if melted into the clothes upon him.
Alright, that one's funny. I like that.
Dr. Johnson, Shakespeare, or Nicodemus, I forget which, alluding to a man as being the best dressed of his acquaintance, was asked why. Answer was because no one could remember nor describe any article of dress he wore.
Did he actually just say that he couldn't remember who he was quoting in his book?
He is being satirical.
Oh, okay. I thought he was being dipshit.
Pretending to quote Dr. Johnson, Shakespeare, or Nicodemus is the Victorian equivalent of saying, and that man, Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, okay. All right.
Chapter 2. How to Dress with Economy. Our author has 4 simple rules.
All right, let's get into it.
You must pay ready money for your clothes.
The fuck does that mean?
Cash.
All right.
These must be well cut and well made up. They must be kept in shape. And they must be kept in thorough repair.
So far, this isn't too outré.
The word economy, I may remark, is often misunderstood and frequently misapplied. In the received and vulgar acceptation of the term, it means the art of getting things cheap.
Yeah, dog, usually does.
Now, getting things cheaply merely because articles are low in price is no part of economy.
No?
In buying anything and everything, 2 questions must invariably be asked. Can I do without it? If not, can I get it for its fair value?
I don't see how that differs from what you said previously.
If you can do without an article and buy it notwithstanding, you do not buy it cheap, let its price be what it may. And if you purchase what you want and give more than the market value for it, you do not succeed in obeying the law of economy.
Yeah?
Yeah, if you're buying something you don't need, that's a waste of money.
Yeah, I guess.
And if you're paying more than something is worth for what you do need, that is also a waste of money.
All right, that's fair.
It's also a fun way to say fail. As in, you didn't fail at budgeting, you merely did not succeed in obeying the law of economy.
Alright, yeah, that is like positive talk, you know?
To dress with economy, you must adopt the ready money system. If you run a tailor's bill, the thing cannot be done. Your credit tailor not only sticks it on in price, but is often careless about fit and makeup, especially if you are so deep in his books that he guesses you are not in a position to pay him off and go elsewhere.
I mean, that's good advice, I guess.
Again, the haute volée of tailors cares little for your custom unless your yearly account is considerable. And although the most aristocratic snip is not above making you a single coat, the same attention is not bestowed on it as if you gave an extensive order.
All right.
Even from the workrooms of Burlington, Albany & Co., I have seen many a solitary coat turned out that would scarcely have passed muster in a ready-made mosaic clothes shop.
Mosaic clothes shop?
Patchwork reseller.
Ah, I see.
And here I may recite what is not generally known anent the credit system.
You needed to get a house?
He's about to spill some trade secrets.
Ooh boy.
The West End long credit tailor seldom or never loses by his bad debts, for he has on his books many customers who neither pay ready money nor ask on order the price of the clothes they get.
Ah.
So he's got a bunch of customers who always pay credit and never ask the price of what they're buying.
Wow, that sounds so realistic, man.
At the end of the year, in addition to charging 5% on all outstanding accounts, they reckon up their debts and divide the sum total of those who are not able to pay among those able and willing to do so.
I mean, does anyone run up a bill just saying, like, I swear to God, if you fucking tell me how much I'm buying right now, I will kill you.
You know the phrase, if you have to ask how much it costs, you can't afford it?
Yeah.
Some people live by that.
Oh, what a dreadful thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it's disturbing. But that's how the 1% does it.
Ah.
So yeah, this guy is claiming that tailors who have enough extraordinarily wealthy clients will, at the end of the year, look at the people who are able and willing to actually pay debts and take everyone's debts and divide it amongst those guys. So they always get paid. Because none of these people are asking how much the clothes actually cost.
That sounds like a hell of a grift.
It's an extraordinary grift.
I don't want to say that I'm going to go do that, but like, if you see me with some more money than usual, I want you to not ask any questions.
With them, therefore, the game is strictly a paying one. Heads, they are sure to win. Tails, there's no possibility of their losing.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear.
Again, when they wish to realize their capital and call in what money they have out, they invent the legal fiction that one of their partners is seceding from the firm, and as a settlement must be effected, they are reluctantly compelled to request you close out your outstanding account. But, they add, when this pleasant transaction is carried out on your part, they will be ready to continue the business as heretofore, and, with thanks for your patronage, they solicit a continuance of your esteemed custom, and beg the further favor of your kind recommendation.
I just love that he said, as heretofore.
Victorians. Avoid stripping pegs, as the phrase is, or buying ready-made clothes.
What does that have to do with stripping a peg?
Because in a ready-made shop, the clothes are already made and hanging on pegs for you to take off.
Oh, okay, so it just means off the rack.
Yes.
Okay.
A skillful attendant at any such depot has a knack of pulling down, smoothing, and humoring whatever garment he may set his great mind on selling you, so that before the cheval glass, you look as if you had been born therein, and you and it both grew on together.
Yeah, I don't like that imagery, man. It'd be cooler if you didn't.
Ah, dear delusion. You pay for it and pass out.
They pass out?
Which, in the parlance of the time, means simply to leave the building.
Ah, okay. Oh, well, very confusing.
After a little wear, you find the smooth, gracefully fitting robe becoming restive. It kicks up its heels and plunges at the collar to displace your hat. It puckers, wrinkles, and makes you its bitter enemy so long as you continue to wear it.
Yeah?
Apparently.
I don't know, man. That sounds really whimsical.
Sickeningly so?
I would say probably about sickeningly whimsical.
I am not writing exclusively for London, but as everyone nowadays comes up to London on the slightest provocation, making an excuse to have their hair cut, as all wish to appear to their best advantage when in town, I advise those who visit modern Babylon to have their clothes made there.
Modern Babylon?
Yes. A popular term for London in the Victorian era. Avoid everything outré in fashion, whether it be in material or in cut. Seek not to copy swells who lead the fashions and sometimes affect eccentric garments and fancy stuffs. Such vagaries may do for men of means who can afford to wear their clothes a short time and then discard them, but you stick to a coat cut on unflinching principles, which will not be out of date next month or next year.
Okay.
Ready money, cut, and makeup having been discussed, we next come to keeping clothes in shape and in thorough repair.
Let's keep them.
In due observance of these lies the great secret of dress, for economy is not affected so much in the original purchase of clothes as in the subsequent wearing of them. What a well-developed talent some men have for taking the shine out of new things in a few days.
Amen.
By excessive lounging, leaning, and lolloping about, they pull off proof impressions of furniture on their backs, elbows, knees, and other frictional parts of the anatomy.
I'm going to be using that as a euphemism a lot more often, I think.
Now, if you do not keep a valet, and if you wish to dress with economy, you had better not. You must either be your own valet or get someone to do the work.
Is it pronounced valet?
When you're talking about the guy who acts as your manservant to do everything for you because you're too rich to put your own pants on, yes.
Oh, okay.
If you're talking about the guy who parks your cars, it's valet.
Oh, I see. All right. No, that explains a lot.
And then, in all capital letters, no clothes, however new, will look well unless kept in shape.
All right, I'm with him there.
This is done by folding them up carefully the moment you take them off.
The moment.
Next morning or the day after will not do.
The day after? Oh, okay, all right. I thought, for some reason, my brain was, like, still wearing it for a day. Which was, in hindsight, pretty dumb.
The day after you take them off.
Yeah. Oh, that's good advice.
The reason is, while the cloth has the warmth of the body in it, it is more plastic and impressionable than when cold.
I don't know that that's true.
I have seen many persons throw their clothes down in a heap to put them on next morning all in wrinkles.
Well, yeah, but it's not because they're cold.
Of course, if you chuck your things in a stack to stagnate into creases and put them on with a pitchfork, There is no hope of your ever looking well-dressed.
That's true. Like, yeah, you know what? That is true.
I grant it takes a little time and some trouble to turn out spick and span, but once the habit is acquired of folding your clothes away, it becomes second nature and well repays the outlay.
Okay.
He is writing for bachelors of means, and he has to tell them to fold their clothes.
That's, you know, that's sad. I say that as if I also fold my clothes as soon as I take them off.
Well, no, because our means of laundry are far different than theirs.
It's still good advice.
It is.
Just for different reasons, I think.
To keep trousers in shape, you should occasionally damp them with a sponge well wrung out.
Yeah?
When folded, envelop them in brown paper and put away under a heavy trunk or other weight.
Yeah, alright, this seems excessive.
Now, I know what you're thinking.
That seems excessive?
Occasionally damping your clothes with a sponge seems like a weird way of keeping them in repair between wearings.
It does seem stupid, yeah.
So remember, this is pre-machine laundry, which means that you have full-body undergarments that you change every day because they're actually touching your skin. And the outer clothes you are washing once a week, if that.
Yeah.
So
why would I want to get them wet?
You're not getting them wet. You are lightly dampening them.
That's getting it wet.
Just to make them pliable. It's like when you steam iron your clothes. You need it a little bit wet just to make it smooth out.
Yeah. All right. Okay, fine.
Note, he doesn't go so far as to suggest these gentlemen iron their own clothes.
Well, no. You get someone to do that. Good God.
Of all enemies to clothes, the most deadly known is dust.
Yeah, that wasn't going to be my guess.
If you have been caught in a whirlwind of it, you will fold away your clothes in vain. They must first be dusted.
Well, tell me why, sir.
Mark well. If you wear cloth ground in with dust and you're caught in the rain, your suit is done for.
Yeah?
You must have a limber switch or cane borne on the effective strength of your toilet establishment, and make free use of it at the end of a dusty day.
Why?
Because dust in 1870s London is not the same dust we experience today.
Well, because it's not dust. He's being euphemistic by saying dust. It's basically like slime. Like, basically airborne slime.
Correct. It is not the human skin cell debris that gathers on disused objects and places in our modern age.
It's slime.
It is part coal soot from the thousands of coal stoves pouring smoke into London air. And it is part horse manure from the thousands of horses tramping up and down London streets and relieving themselves along the way.
Pee-pee slime.
So, as Dee so adroitly pointed out, dust is yet another sickeningly whimsical euphemism employed by the Victorians for the absolute filth they were walking around in.
I guess, to be fair, I wouldn't want to have to say semi-liquid filth in their defense. Or, perhaps as I also put it, pee-pee slime.
And on that note, we close the book, A Gentleman's Guide to Dressing with Economy, for now.
It better be for now, because I've got to know more about how to be fashionable. This guy roasted me.
If you would also like to hear more of The Gentleman's Art of Dressing with Economy, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or on our subreddit, r/antiquesfreaks, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked what you heard and want to use your powers to tell us that, or if you want to say in the most powerful way possible, I want to know how to dress, please God help me, you can scroll on down to wherever you're listening to this and leave us a review. 0 out of 10, called me a register biscuit, didn't like it.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes and check out our audio commentary track for the movie The Little Stranger that we recorded with our friends at the Terrible Book Club podcast, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
And gracious, do I ever recommend it.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love. And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Bye.